This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yis Wuhib. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight:
Kenyan police say they have foiled a terrorist plot by a group believed to have links to Islamic State. The group was allegedly planning large-scale attacks intended to kill innocent Kenyans. Suspects include medical experts who police say were planning to launch an attack using the biological agent anthrax.
That's VOA's Jill Craig reporting from Nairobi. Details next.
Also, the International Crisis Group says it will take more than military action to defeat Boko Haram, and Burundi's economy is struggling 1 year after the start of the political crisis.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour: Kenyan police say they have foiled a terrorist plot by a group believed to have links to the Islamic State. The group was allegedly planning large-scale attacks intended to kill innocent Kenyans. Suspects include medical experts who police say were planning to launch an attack using the biological agent anthrax. From Nairobi, VOA's Jill Craig reports.
Kenyan police have arrested medical intern Mohamed Abdi Ali, his wife, and her friend for their alleged involvement in an East African terror network. Police say other accomplices, including two medical interns, are on the run. George Musamali is a security analyst for East and Central Africa.
I believe that we've upped our game in terms of collection of intelligence, because this was a very, very big breakthrough on the part of the intelligence agencies in Kenya. This includes the National Intelligence Services, the Kenya Police, and also people from the military intelligence. It shows that, that right now the intelligence units are working together and they're well coordinated.
Police say the foiled plot included plans for a biological terror attack using anthrax, an infectious bacteria that spreads rapidly once spores get into the body. They say the attack, planned for April 29th, was to be on a similar scale to the Westgate Mall assault of September 2013, in which 67 people were killed. That attack was carried out by the Somalia-based Al-Qaeda-linked group Al-Shabaab. Police released the names and photos of all five suspects on Twitter. They say the group was radicalizing and recruiting university students and other Kenyan youth, even encouraging them to join terror groups in Libya and Syria. And the alleged involvement of Islamic State with this group is a concern, according to Musamali.
Clearly, it shows the IS now wants to be a part of the play in East and Central Africa. And I think this is something that should worry us very much.
Warning that the two suspects at large are armed and dangerous, Kenyan police are offering 2 million Kenyan shillings, almost $20,000, for information leading to their arrest. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Some are raising questions about the reports from Kenya, saying there's been no confirmation that any anthrax virus was seized in the raids. And if so, how was it contained, since it is highly contagious?
Leaders of the European Commission met today to announce new proposals to resolve the migrant crisis in Europe. Those recommendations now go to the European Parliament in June. They would redistribute the migrant burden among member countries. They also would address a major concern of Turkey, a country that will help them resettle more than a million migrants that have flooded Europe. From London, VOA European correspondent Louis Ramirez talked to David Arnold about the Commission's recommendations.
The European Commission came out and said that it will propose that the European Parliament vote to lift visa restrictions on Turkish nationals. It said that this would be pending some benchmarks that the European Commission believes Turkey is very close to meeting. These benchmarks have to do primarily with the use of biometric passports that will allow EU countries to keep track of Turkish nationals to get some reasonable guarantee they will not overstay their visits. Those are some benchmarks, certainly not the wider ones that the European Union has been calling for Turkey to reach, and those have to do with issues of human rights protections, the protection of minorities. press freedoms and rule of law. Those are wider issues that the European Commission Vice President Frans Timmermans, in a news conference in Brussels on Wednesday, said the EU must now engage Turkey on, not simply, as he said, shout over the fence at them.
What about those wider concerns of the European Union that Turkey needs to improve its human rights record and strengthen the rule of law?
These are things that the European Union has long been pressing Turkey on ever since it stated its desire to join the European Union and said they have to become more in line with the culture and democracies of the European Union. And so this is one small step moving Turkey in that direction. Of course, these actions are in response to the growing desperation on the part of EU nations to deal with the migrant crisis. The constituencies in these countries have long been saying that their governments are not dealing with it. One of the main issues here is the concern that the migrants are concentrating in just a few of the countries, while the leadership of the EU says the burden has to be shared by all. An example of countries taking more than their fair share would be Greece. Greece does not have the financial resources to deal with the hundreds of thousands of people who've come in over the last year, has called for help, and has simply been told to deal with it. So now this is an effort to spread the load more evenly.
What are the concerns of those countries who have opposed the old plan to determine quotas of refugees for each EU country?
There is the other concern of countries primarily in Eastern Europe, former communist bloc countries like Poland and Hungary, that say they don't want any migrants. Those countries, under these proposals, face what is a de facto penalties, although the European Commission is not using that term, to make them pay a share. The words that were used were that there cannot be a la carte solidarity, that solidarity needs to be shown, but it can also be shown financially, and that is helping countries like Greece pay for taking in these migrants.
There were reports that the commissioners had discussed a proposal to charge any country that did not take its quota of refugees, and that they would pay a penalty of about $300,000 per refugee.
That's an estimate, and in terms of numbers of people to be admitted, no quotas have been listed or named or described in the first set of proposals. And likewise, the amount of these penalties has not been set either, but it would be tied to a country's GDP, and it would also be divided by the number of migrants that a country refuses. So those numbers are very much in flux. We would not know what they are until if and when the European Parliament approves these proposals.
That was VOA correspondent Luis Ramirez in London talking to David Arnold in Washington.
In other migrant-related news, police in Paris used tear gas to disperse protesters as they evacuated hundreds of migrants from a high school under renovation. The protesters had formed a human chain around the building in northern Paris. About 300 migrants were seeking shelter in the building. Reports say they are from Somalia, Sudan, Eritrea, Afghanistan, and Syria. The Paris police chief says the migrants were relocated to other shelters and encouraged to apply for asylum. In Greece, firefighters are warning they are not prepared for this year's fire season, raising concerns about the safety of thousands of migrants and refugees. More than 50,000 people are in makeshift shelters or shelters built by the military. The Union of Fire Brigade Officers has sent an open letter to Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras saying there's a shortage of equipment, funding, and firefighters.
Nigeria and its neighboring allies have been waging a military offensive against Boko Haram insurgents. But while efforts have succeeded in reducing major attacks, the group remains a threat, often using women and children in suicide bomb attacks. The International Crisis Group says it will take more than military action to defeat the group. VOA's Jody Capua reports.
Tens of thousands of people have died in Boko Haram attacks since 2009. Millions have been displaced. Hundreds of girls have been abducted, some forced into child marriages, others strapped with explosives and sent into crowded markets. Local economies and cross-border trade have been damaged or disrupted by the insurgency. The ICG has released a new report called Boko Haram on the Back Foot. The report's been released prior to a regional security summit in Abuja, Nigeria. In Dakar, Dr. Vincent Fouché is a senior analyst for the International Crisis Group. He assesses the current strength of Boko Haram in the wake of the regional military response.
It's difficult to put a precise number for the fighters because it's a movement that can kind of morph back into the countryside in case it needs to do so. But, you know, it's still there. It's certainly on the back foot. It has lost quite a lot of ground since last year. It is now mostly operating in the northeastern quadrant of Borno State, which is the most northeastern state in Nigeria. And it can operate some actions in neighboring Cameroon as well, in the far north of Cameroon. But its reach has really diminished.
He warns against declaring mission accomplished in efforts to defeat the group.
We think that it doesn't mean that it's not there anymore. It still is a challenge. It can transform. It can redeploy. It can turn into a full terrorist organization.
Fouché says while counterinsurgency action is still needed, there must be a broader view of the Boko Haram problem.
I think it's quite important to realize that it's actually a mixed bag of people who are there for a variety of reasons. A number of people are there because of local struggles, because of economic opportunities, because they were looking for protections as well in a situation of civil war. And I think it's quite important that we allow some doors to remain open for people to speak and engage. Full eradication of an insurgency this size is just not reasonable. It's just not feasible. There remains a need to be open to discussion.
The International Crisis Group senior analyst says there's a major humanitarian issue that must be addressed as well.
There's a very substantial population of IDPs and refugees. We're talking about almost 3 million people. Those people live in extremely difficult conditions because the camps and the resources for the camps are not there. A lot of them actually do not live in camps. Those camps are not sustainable. So something needs to be done, otherwise part of this population could become vulnerable to recruitment in the insurgency as well.
He also says there's the long-term challenge of economic inequality in the Lake Chad Basin. It's been made worse by the Boko Haram insurgency. Militant groups often find recruits among poor populations who feel they've been neglected by their governments. Fouché praises the joint military efforts by Nigeria, Cameroon, Chad, and Niger.
It's particularly notable, actually, between Nigeria and Cameroon. Remember that those two countries were almost at war 20 years ago on the southern border. Now those two countries are really making interesting steps towards cooperation. That's a very, very positive thing. One country's problems are also another country's problems. You just can't stand by and watch.
The Regional Security Summit in Abuja is scheduled for May 14th. The four nations' international partners will also attend. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wuhib, 18 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Leaders of the European Commission met today to announce new proposals to resolve the migrant crisis in Europe. Kenyan police say they have foiled a terrorist plot by a group believed to have links to Islamic State. And the International Crisis Group says it will take more than military action to defeat Boko Haram. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Burundi's economy is struggling 1 year after the start of the political crisis. Business people say the economic problems are the worst in decades. Moses Habayarimana reports from Bujumbura.
Burundi's political problems caused development partners to suspend aid to the country. The revenue authority says collection was about 32% below the same period last year in May. In April of 2015, President Pierre Nkurunziza announced he would seek a third term in the office that triggered protests and violence that have claimed more than 500 lives and displaced about 260,000 people. Baraza Franco is a Ugandan businessman working in Burundi For more than 6 years, he says that doing business in the country has changed drastically.
As per now, business has gone down, compared to past years. You started in 2015, and this year, things are going bad. We are trying our best, even the government, they are trying very much to control dollar, but still we have dollar scarcity. We can't pay our suppliers. Those are the problems we are facing. From my side, I'm in steel product, whereby the first priority, the government is giving priority to fuel, giving to medicine.
Baraza is one of the business people in the country who have been affected by the political crisis.
This year, when I went for a general meeting with our group shareholders, we have seen that our section in Burundi has come down because the performance has reduced a lot. Even we are not making profit, we are making losses due to overheads.
A fuel shortage hit the country this week. It has raised more concerns among business people about the possibility of food and commodity price increases. Justin is one of the petrol station managers in Bujumbura. She says they are waiting for the distributors to give us the fuel. She doesn't know if they will give it to them soon. She says if people don't move or not transported to the daily activities, it is a serious problem because they may die of hunger. She says all the sectors will be affected. The country's economy shrank by 7.4% last year, taking Burundi from world's third poorest country to the poorest with a GDP of $315 per person, according to the International Monetary Fund. As the fuel shortage seems to be worsening economic stability in the country, Parsem, a Burundian think tank, has warned that if the current crisis is not solved quickly, generations of Burundians could be at risk. It warned of economic disaster if the Burundi government does not work hard for the economic stability. Faustin Ndikumana is the chairman of Parsem.
La crise a éclaté la dernière année de mise en application du CSLP2.
He says that the crisis has destroyed years of poverty reduction strategy in the country, that there is a gap of more than 70% in funds related to this project. He says that the country was among the last three poorest countries in the world. Now, it is the poorest country on planet. He says the National Bureau of Statistics recently released the poverty rate, which is now at 70%, and other provinces at 80%, like Kayanza and Muyinga, he added. The development and implementation of the Strategic Framework for Growth and Poverty Reduction Strategy was aimed to reduce youth unemployment rate in Burundi. He says lack of programs and a vision to guide economic activities so that things should work is not there. He says it is also a blow on the administration. Efforts by the government to defuse the crisis continue. However, a peace dialogue was postponed from this week until later in the month. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
The African Union is holding the first ever international conference on the Great Green Wall in Dakar this week. The goal is to map a strategy to stop desertification in the Sahel-Sahara region, which experts say is driving poverty and insecurity. Alpha Jallo reports from Dakar.
At the climate change summit in Paris in December, world leaders pledged $4 billion over the next 5 years for the restoration of Africa's landscapes. That included support for the so-called Great Green Wall initiative. Now, delegates from 20 countries north and south of the Sahara are meeting with experts and grassroots organizations in Dakar to discuss the way forward. Speaking Tuesday at the opening of the conference, Senegal Minister of Environment Abdoulaye Bibi Bande explained the idea behind the Great Green Wall strategy.
La rencontre d'aujourd'hui constitue une bonne opportunité pour donner suite.
He says the Great Green Wall is about much more than simply building a simple band of greenery. He says it is a strategy to increase the value of the Sahel zone through better land use. The Great Green Wall was first proposed in 2005. It was then championed by former Senegalese President Ablaye Watt. The goal is to plant thousands of kilometers of trees and shrubbery from Senegal to Djibouti to stop the southern spread of the Sahara Desert. The certification and land degradation in the region have contributed to severe food shortages and insecurity, including the rise of terrorist groups. Amadi Job is the program manager for the Natural Resources Governance Program of the NEPAD Agency at the African Union. He says the Great Green Wall will also address drivers of illegal migration.
These range from climate change, land degradation, declining agricultural productivity, and insufficient job creation for our rural communities, to mention a few. These are ripple knock-on effects such as increased migration, rapid urbanization, creating increased demand for jobs and changing consumption patterns. For example, regarding the problem of land degradation, it is estimated that this problem affects about 65% of African population, and it is important for commensurate actions to be taken.
Experts say this conference reflects the strong political will behind the project. Now it is time for the technicians to get to work. Alpha Diallo for VOA News, Dakar.
Well, a diamond the size of a tennis ball will be auctioned in London on June 29th, and experts say it could sell for $70 million. AFP reports the 3-billion-year-old diamond is the largest discovered in more than 100 years. It was found last November in Botswana and measures over 1,100 carats. The diamond is named Letisi Larona, which means our light, in the Tswana language of southern Africa.
World-famous Beninese musician Angelique Kidjo has won a human rights award along with three African youth activists. They've been honored for their work defending freedom of expression and peaceful protest. Right group Amnesty International announced the winners today, praising Kidjo and the groups Fed Up, The Citizens' Broom, and Lucha for their work in Africa and around the world. Amnesty says the award honors those who have shown exceptional courage in standing up to injustice and who have used their talents to inspire others and further the cause of human rights. Kidjo fled Benin in the 1980s after being pressured to perform for the country's authoritarian regime. The honor, known as the Ambassador of Conscience Award, has previously gone to world leaders such as Nelson Mandela. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali, coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehiz Huhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Sidrak Franklin, thanks for choosing the Voice of America. Next time on Straight Talk Africa. We'll discuss Burundi's violence and security. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.